Her flight is the day before the court hearing, the 22nd. Don't worry, she won't forget.
Elaine nodded, although she would rather have heard that she was already in the country. For if Anastasia's mother didn't return, the adoption would have to be postponed again.
The mother knows we can't keep her child here at the orphanage any longer, Dr. Chiabanu added. So she will come. Any more questions?
I don't think so, Ian said.
You go to the playroom, you will see a difference, while I fetch Anastasia. Our new care worker is playing with her and trying to teach her some English.
Elaine's surprise showed on her face.
We have another worker funded by the government and some more toys, Dr. Chiabanu said. You saw the slide at the front? Things are gradually improving.
That's good, Elaine said. Dr. Chiabanu headed off to fetch Anastasia while Ian and Elaine went down the corridor towards the playroom. The orphanage was quiet, as it had been on their previous visits, and although the large old-style metal radiators were on, it wasn't warm. Stepping into the playroom, they saw straight away what Dr. Chiabanu had meant. The room had been painted, and on one wall was a large, brightly coloured mural showing happy, smiling children playing outside in the warm summer sun.
"Isn't that lovely?" Elaine said.
"It certainly brightens up the room,"
Ian replied, going over for a closer look. He bent to read the signatures at the bottom.
"Guess who painted it?"
Elaine shook her head.
"Pam and Mel, the students."
"Wow! They certainly did a good job."
Also in the room were a second beanbag and a toy box. Presently, footsteps sounded in the corridor outside, and then the unmistakable voice of Anastasia.
"Mommy and Daddy,"
she said evenly with a heavy accent. Elaine could have wept with joy. She appeared at the door wearing a thick grey woolen sweater rolled up at the wrists and jogging-style pants tucked into thick socks.
"Mommy and Daddy,"
she said again, and looked at them. Dr. Chiabanu smiled, pleased.
"You see, she learns English."
"Wonderful," Elaine cried and went to her. "Hello, Anastasia. How are you, love?"
"Say, I am well, thank you," Dr. Chiabanu told her.
"I am well, thank you,"
Anastasia repeated in cute, broken English.
"That's very good," Elaine said, blinking back tears.
Satisfied, Dr. Chiabanu ruffled Anastasia's hair.
"I'll see you at court on Thursday, then," and he left.
"Yes, thank you,"
Ian called after him. Elaine knelt so she was at Anastasia's height.
"You've grown! You're a big girl!"
Anastasia stared at her.
"We've come back for you just as we said."
Elaine felt her eyes fill again.
"We're going to be your mummy and daddy," Ian said, joining them.
"Mummy and daddy,"
Anastasia repeated.
"Yes, love, that's right."
Unable to resist the urge to hug her any longer, Elaine wrapped Anastasia in her arms and held her close. But she felt rigid, unresponsive, which Elaine assumed was because she wasn't used to being held or cuddled. Not wanting her to feel uncomfortable, she kissed her forehead and let her go.
"Let's play with something in the toy box,"
Elaine suggested, nodding towards the beanbags and toy box. Anastasia stared at Elaine, then tapped her forearm.
"What is it, love?"
Elaine asked.
"What do you want?"
Without language to explain, Anastasia tapped her arm again, this time more insistently, then looked at Ian.
"I think she's asking about the bag of toys we used to bring in with us," he said.
"Oh, I see. We have brought new toys for you, but they're all packed in our cases in the car. We'll bring some in tomorrow when we've had a chance to unpack."
Not understanding but appreciating there was no bag of toys, Anastasia pulled on Elaine's shoulder bag.
"Phone,"
Ian said.
"I know,"
she said, smiling, and took her mobile from her bag.
"Come and sit on the beanbags and we'll look at your photographs. We've got more photos of our house and your bedroom to show you."
Ian joined them on the beanbags, he and Elaine sitting either side of Anastasia, as she scrolled through the photographs, while Elaine and Ian gave her a running commentary. Bedroom, bed, garden, and so on. Once Anastasia had exhausted Elaine's photographs, she looked pointedly at Ian. He laughed and, taking his phone from his pocket, passed it to her. They were pleased Anastasia had remembered the bags of toys they'd brought in before and their phones. It showed there was nothing wrong with her memory. She seemed bright and alert. She didn't try to repeat any of the words they said, except when they came to the photographs of themselves.
"Mummy and Daddy,"
she said in her broken English. "Yes," Elaine cried, overjoyed.
"I think Mummy and Daddy are the only words they've taught her," Ian said dryly.
But it didn't matter. Not one little bit. Anastasia was intelligent and would quickly pick up English once they were home. And, of course, Mummy and Daddy were the words they most wanted to hear. That Anastasia spoke them in a flat voice, as though simply repeating something she'd been told, didn't escape their notice. But she spent most of her life in the orphanage, with only brief spells with her mother, a single parent, so had little experience of the love, warmth and nurturing that were normally associated with Mummy and Daddy. With time, she would come to know what these words really meant, and her eyes would light up when she heard them. But for now, Elaine and Ian were content and very happy that their long-awaited daughter sat between them, saying Mummy and Daddy. Once Anastasia had finished with the photographs on Ian's phone, Elaine began going through the toy box. While the box was new, many of the toys it contained were old and broken. There was no sign of the toys they'd left for Anastasia. They hadn't really expected to see them again, and she wasn't wearing the clothes they'd left for her, but then they wouldn't have been warm enough now anyway. Anastasia quickly exhausted what the toy box had to offer, and scrambling up from the beanbag, went over to the mural on the wall. "It's a lovely picture," Elaine said, joining her. Ian went too.
"Sun,"
Elaine said, pointing to the big yellow sun.
"Sun,"
Anastasia repeated.
"Yes, good girl,"
Elaine was delighted. "Swing," she said.
"Swing,"
Anastasia repeated, and Elaine and Ian clapped.
"Ball,"
Ian said, pointing.
"Ball."
They clapped some more. And so they went through all the images on the mural, with Anastasia repeating the words. They clapped after each one. When they came to the end, they began again, but Anastasia had had enough. She was, after all, only 2 years and 7 months old. With a quick glance around the room, she realized there was nothing else of interest and ran to the door.
"No, not out there,"
Ian called, but it was too late. She was that bit taller, stronger, and possibly more strong-willed than before, and easily opened the door and ran out. They quickly went after her in time to see her disappear into one of the nursery rooms further up. A care worker shouted at her from inside. They didn't know what she said, but it was obvious Anastasia shouldn't have been in there. She ran out, along the corridor, and into the next room. Elaine and Ian went in, but she was nowhere to be seen. A dozen cots ran in rows with little room in between. They'd been in this room before on their very first visit when they'd arrived to be told that Lana was dead, and the care worker had shown them other children they could adopt. What they saw now was no less disturbing and upsetting. Here lay some of the most disabled children, confined to cots and still without any stimulation, just staring into space and thumb-sucking or rocking for comfort. The only improvement in the room seemed to be a single mobile hanging from the ceiling in one corner, but visible to only a few infants in the cots beneath it.
"She must be in here somewhere," Ian said quietly. "There's no other way out."
"Anastasia," Elaine said, and bent down to look under the cots.
"There you are."
She was hiding under the cot furthest away, curled up and grinning.
"Come out of there."
Anastasia grinned some more. Elaine made her way between the cots to where Anastasia was hiding and, getting onto her hands and knees, reached under the cot.
"Come on out. I'm sure you're not supposed to be in here. You'll get into trouble."
The smell of urine was worse under the cots, and the floor needed a good scrub. Anastasia finally came out, and she and Elaine went to where Ian was waiting by the door. Anastasia seemed oblivious to the suffering of the children around them, probably because she saw them every day. But for Elaine and Ian, it was a brutal reminder of the life these poor children had, existing rather than enjoying any quality of life. Like many couples who had adopted from this country, they made regular donations to charities set up to improve conditions in the orphanages, but change was painfully slow. They returned to the playroom, but Anastasia was restless and wouldn't settle to much for very long. Aware that this was their first meeting after a gap of 3 months and they had yet to check into their hotel and unpack, they stayed for just over an hour and then told Anastasia they would come tomorrow with toys and went to find a care worker to see them out. The care worker was new, a bit more personable than the others, and willing to speak
English. "You come from England?"
she asked as she opened the main door.
"Yes, this morning."
"Anastasia is a very lucky girl to have a nice mummy and daddy," she said.
"We're the lucky ones," Elaine said, and Ian agreed. She remained by the gate with Anastasia and encouraged her to wave goodbye as Ian and Elaine got into the cab.
"Goodbye. See you tomorrow," Elaine called from her window.
"Yes,
see you tomorrow,"
the care worker replied.
"So, everything is good?"
Danny asked, starting the engine.
"Yes, very good indeed,"
Ian confirmed. Chapter 9 Court Hearing. Ian and Elaine knew they'd made the right decision arriving a few days before the court hearing so they could spend time with Anastasia. Maggie had said she thought it was a good idea too. Although Anastasia clearly remembered them, there was a distance about her, a coolness towards them, which didn't immediately go over the following days and was probably a defence mechanism. They assumed it was the result of 3 months without seeing them, with little stimulation or interaction. Of course she was bound to feel rejected and cautious about showing affection in case she was abandoned again. It was only natural and to be expected, and they consoled themselves that once home, any emotional damage she may have suffered would be quickly undone by their love, care and commitment. The new care worker was far more pleasant and approachable than the others had been, and they asked her to take some photographs of Anastasia and them together. Elaine and Ian were staying in the same hotel as before, but hadn't seen Maria, the waitress they'd got to know, so after a couple of days they asked the new waitress where she was.
"Maria? Is she here?"
Ian said.
"No, she leave."
"Oh, where has she gone?" Elaine asked.
"To England to work. More money."
Elaine nodded. Maria had told them that had been her plan.
"Did she take Lana with her?" Elaine asked. "No, she stay with her mother."
Although it was sad that Maria had to be parted from her daughter and would probably only be able to afford the fare home to see her once a year, it was common practice in this country. Wage earners went abroad to work where the wages were higher and then sent money home to the relative looking after their child.
"Do you know where she is living in England?" Elaine asked, thinking they might contact her. "No, London, I think."
So it was unlikely they could trace her. The days between their arrival and the court date flew by, with shopping in the morning and the afternoon spent at the orphanage with Anastasia. On the eve of the court hearing, having not seen or heard from Dr. Chiabanu since the day they'd arrived, Ian and Elaine felt they would like to speak to him and have confirmation that Anastasia's mother had returned. They didn't want to antagonize him by suggesting they doubted his word, but it would be devastating if they arrived at court to find she wasn't there. After some deliberation, Ian telephoned Dr. Chiabanu's mobile. He wouldn't be at the orphanage this late, and he answered with a rather curt,
"Chiabanu?"
"Dr. Chiabanu, Ian Hudson."
"Yes, what can I do for you?"
"I'm sorry to disturb you, but we just wanted to confirm that Anastasia's mother has returned ready for court tomorrow."
"Yes, of course. Why shouldn't she?"
"No reason. Thank you. Sorry to trouble you," Ian said a quick goodbye. As they'd thought, Dr. Chiabanu hadn't liked having his judgment questioned, but at least they had the reassurance they needed. Or did they? His response, "Yes, of course, why shouldn't she?" almost sounded as though he hadn't checked. So Elaine and Ian weren't completely at ease. However, there was nothing further they could do but hope the doctor was right. "Good luck for tomorrow," Maggie texted as they were about to go to bed. "We're all thinking of you." "Thank you," Elaine replied. They didn't get much sleep that night and passed much of it by watching television programs in a foreign language. Elaine kept getting out of bed to check that everything she needed for Anastasia was in the holdall they were taking to court. Her coat, gloves, boots, drink and so forth. They rose early and were the first down to breakfast, although neither of them had an appetite. Ian had fallen silent and kept checking his phone, while Elaine periodically raised the questions buzzing anxiously around her head. "How long do you think the court hearing will last? Will Anastasia's mother leave straight after? Will she have someone with her for support? Will she let us take a photograph of her?" And so on. They had photographs of the orphanage and their hotel room to include in Anastasia's life storybook, but they knew they wouldn't be allowed to take photographs inside the court, and Dr. Chiabanu had made it clear that the mother had to be asked before one was taken of her. Elaine and Ian knew that some couples had photographs of their child's birth mother, but others did not. Once they finished breakfast, they returned to their hotel room to change into the suits they'd brought with them, especially for their court appearance. With coats on over their suits, their passports in Ian's briefcase, Anastasia's belongings in a holdall and their anxiety rising, they went down to the lobby to wait for the cab they'd booked for 9:45. They'd used the same firm, as Dr. Chiabanu had advised, but were disappointed when they saw a cab driver they didn't know come in and ask at reception for Mr. and Mrs. Hudson. It would have been comforting to see Danny's familiar face on such a momentous and nerve-wracking day, and Danny had become part of their adoption journey. They even had a photograph of him standing by his cab to include in Anastasia's life storybook. "No Danny?" Ian asked the driver once they were in the cab and on their way.
"He have day off. Visit his mother."
"Okay.
I take you to court building."
"Yes, please."
It was a 20-minute journey to the court, and Elaine and Ian passed the time by gazing out of their side windows at the unfamiliar street. They hadn't ventured in this direction before. Houses gave way to a dual carriageway, and then they were in the old part of the neighbouring town. The driver didn't try to make conversation. His English wasn't as good as Danny's, and he listened to the radio. When he parked outside a very old, grey stone building, it took them a moment to realise it was the courthouse. It was tucked in one corner of a square of similar-aged buildings around a cobbled square that looked unchanged from a century or more ago.
"I wait here," the driver said, and they got out.
"I'll need to use the bathroom," Elaine said quietly to Ian as she followed him up the worn stone steps that led to the courthouse.
A heavy wooden door with large wrought-iron hinges and a ring handle stood slightly ajar, and Ian heaved it open. They entered a lobby with stone-flagged flooring, where a man, a court official, sat at a table with a printed sheet and a pen.
"Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Hudson," Ian said.
He ran his pen down the 10 or so names on the list and ticked off their names, then gesticulated for them to put their bags onto the table. Giving the bags a perfunctory search, he waved Elaine and Ian through the door behind him.
"Waiting room, third door on your right," he said.
"Thank you. Where is the ladies' bathroom?" Elaine asked.
"First door."
Once inside, it was obvious from the symbol on the door where the ladies was. As Ian waited in the corridor outside, Anastasia and her mother arrived. Anastasia looked at him but didn't say anything, and they went through a door further down.
"They're here," Ian said as Elaine came out of the bathroom.
"Well, that's a relief," she sighed, but her heart was racing. "Was Dr. Chiabanu with them?"
"No."
"Where are they now?"
"In the waiting room, I think."
They took a couple of steps and stopped, trying to prepare themselves for meeting Anastasia's mother. It would have been easier if Dr. Chiabanu had been there to introduce them and possibly translate, but it seemed cowardly to wait in the corridor until he arrived. Anastasia's mother would be just as, if not more, nervous than they were. Although they'd known for a while that they'd meet Anastasia's mother, they had little idea of how to manage the situation, what to say or do. Taking a deep breath, Ian opened the door and led the way into the waiting room. A dozen or so wooden chairs had been crammed in around the edges, and that was the only furniture in the room. A single light bulb hung from the centre of the ceiling, giving off a small glow in what was otherwise a dismal, dingy room. They looked at Anastasia and her mother, sitting in one corner with spare chairs either side. Her mother had her head lowered and was looking down. Two men in their 20s, an elderly man and a middle-aged couple, sat on the other side of the room. Having seen them, Anastasia tugged at her mother's arm and then whispered something. Her mother looked up as Ian and Elaine crossed the room under the gaze of the others waiting. They both said hello to Anastasia's mother, and she nodded in reply. They sat down, Elaine next to her and Ian beside her. Apparently she didn't have another adult with her for support. "How are you?" Elaine asked awkwardly. She shook her head and pointed to her lips, signalling she didn't have any English. Elaine threw her a reassuring smile, although she felt anything but confident herself. It was upsetting and surreal, sitting here in this foreign court waiting room beside the mother of the child who would shortly be theirs. It was like nothing she'd ever experienced before or would again. There was no point of reference, so she didn't know how to act. Elaine sat stiff and upright, struggling to contain her emotions under the inquisitive gaze of the others in the waiting room. It seemed Anastasia had been told to wait quietly, for there was none of her usual exuberance or inquisitiveness. She just sat beside her mother, looking around. It was chilly. The only heat came from a small electric fire high up on one wall. Elaine and Ian, like the others waiting, had kept their coats on, but neither Anastasia nor her mother had coats. Anastasia was wearing the tracksuit bottoms and jumper they'd seen her in at the orphanage, her mother a long woolen dress with thick tights, a threadbare grey cardigan that could have been a man's, and a headscarf. Elaine unzipped the holdall she'd placed at her feet and took out the coat they'd brought for Anastasia and passed it to her mother. She smiled and nodded, clearly pleased and impressed. It was probably the first new coat the child had ever possessed. She said something to Anastasia and then drew her from her chair and helped her into the coat. She turned to them and said, "Thank you." It was her only English, and Elaine could have wept. "Pity we didn't bring a coat for her mother, too," she said quietly to Ian. But that could have been construed as giving the mother a gift, which wasn't allowed. The others in the courtroom had watched this, and Elaine met their scrutinizing gaze and looked away, hoping they didn't have long to wait. If it was uncomfortable for them, it must have been torture for Anastasia's mother, although she seemed to be coping. Elaine tried to picture herself in her position, about to give up her child, and saw herself distraught and weeping uncontrollably. She assumed Anastasia's mother must have prepared herself for this moment over the previous year when it had become obvious, and she had accepted, that like other poor women in her position, she couldn't look after her child and there was no alternative. The door opened and another man came in, and then a few minutes later another couple, and the waiting room slowly filled. It was now 10:45. "Where's Dr. Chiabanu?" Ian said anxiously. "How would I know?" Elaine returned tetchily, then apologized. Nerves were getting the better of her. "I'm sure he knows what he's doing," she said, and placed a reassuring hand on his. Anastasia said something to her mother, who looked at Elaine, then she pointed to the holdall and gesticulated drinking. Elaine smiled and nodded. "Yes, of course." Her mother must have been told they'd bring a drink for Anastasia. Elaine unzipped the holdall again and took out the selection of drinks she'd brought especially, small packets of apple and orange juice, strawberry and chocolate milkshakes and a bottle of water. Anastasia's eyes lit up, and she took the chocolate milkshake.
"Thank you," her mother said.
She inserted the straw that was attached to the packet, then handed the drink back to Anastasia. 5 minutes later, the door opened, and Dr. Chiabanu finally appeared.
"Thank goodness," Ian said.
He motioned for them all to go outside, and they left the waiting room.
"Good. The child has a coat and a drink," Dr. Chiabanu said as they grouped around him.
He exchanged a few words with Anastasia's mother in their own language, and then turned to them.
"Your hearing was set incorrectly for 2 p.m. this afternoon."
Elaine gasped.
"Don't worry. I have spoken to the judge, and it has been moved. We can't have the child waiting all that time. You will go in second on the list."
"Oh, thank you," Ian said gratefully.
"You have your passports with you?"
"Yes."
Ian took them out of his briefcase and passed them to Dr. Chiabanu, who tucked them into the folder he held.
"We can wait outside the courtroom," he said. "The first case is being heard now. It won't take long."
Elaine felt her heart start to pound. Anastasia's mother took her daughter's hand and walked behind Dr. Chiabanu. Ian and Elaine followed them down a corridor, where they stopped at the door at the end.
"We will be told when to go in," Dr.
Chiabanu said, then translated for Anastasia's mother. She nodded solemnly. They stood in awkward silence, tense and somber, and not sure where to look. Even Dr. Chiabanu had lost his usual relaxed manner and kept opening and closing his folder, more as a displacement for anxiety than checking the contents. Elaine stole occasional glances at Anastasia and her mother, who kept her gaze down. Then Dr. Chiabanu said something to her, and she looked up and replied. Elaine glanced at him.
"I asked her when she was returning to work, and she said tomorrow."
Elaine nodded. A few minutes later, the courtroom door suddenly opened, and a man and a teenage boy came out.
"We're in next,"
Dr. Chiabanu said, straightening. "Wait here."
He disappeared inside, and the door closed behind him. Elaine met Anastasia's mother's eyes and saw her anxiety, and for a few seconds they were both united in the bond of their ordeal. Ian cleared his throat nervously, and no one spoke. Then the door to the courtroom opened again, and Dr. Chiabanu said,
"Come in. Only speak when the judge asks you to."
Elaine swallowed hard. This was it. The time had finally come, and they followed Anastasia and her mother into the courtroom. Her gaze went to the judge, who sat behind a bench on a raised plinth at the front of the court, reading paperwork. Two rows of empty chairs were in front of him. He didn't immediately look up. A court official and a police officer sat behind a desk to the right of the podium.
"Wait there until you're told to approach the bench,"
Dr. Chiabanu said quietly, pointing to a place a few yards in front. He translated for Anastasia's mother, and she joined them. Elaine saw she was chewing her lip anxiously as she held her daughter's hand. The empty drink packet dangled from Anastasia's other hand. The room was quiet save for some distant street noise. They waited without moving as the judge continued to read their paperwork. In his 50s, he wore a dark suit and half-rimmed glasses. Elaine and Ian could see their passports on the bench beside their adoption application. The room was grey stone like the rest of the building, and not much warmer. Elaine shivered, although more from nerves than cold. Presently the judge looked up and said something to Dr. Chiabanu, who replied. Then there appeared to be some more questions and answers between them. Elaine's and Ian's apprehension grew. Was there something wrong with their application that would stop the adoption going ahead? Anastasia's mother would understand what was being said, but her face was expressionless. It fell quiet again as the judge turned the pages of their application. Then he took a sip of water from the glass on the bench and nodded at Dr. Chiabanu. He said something to Anastasia's mother, who took her daughter's hand and stepped forward. The empty milkshake carton dropped, and she quickly picked it up and stuffed it in her cardigan pocket. The judge spoke to her, and appeared to ask her some questions, his tone authoritative. She replied in a small, timid voice, head bent and only occasionally meeting his gaze. Then she must have been told to return to where she'd been standing, and it was their turn.
"Go forward," Dr. Chiabanu told them. "Call the judge, sir."
They took the few steps to where Anastasia and her mother had stood. Elaine felt her legs tremble and hoped they wouldn't give way.
"You are Ian and Elaine Hudson?"
the judge asked in very good English, addressing Ian.
"Yes, sir. You and your wife have applied to adopt this child, Anastasia?" "Yes, sir,"
Ian said again.
"You are from England. I studied there."
Ian nodded and then smiled, unsure if he should say something, but the judge was continuing.
"I have read the home study report from your social worker. You can't have children?" "No, sir." "And you can provide for the child? You know you are expected to open a bank account for her when you return and save for her each month." "Yes, sir."
He said something to Dr. Chiabanu in their own language, and then to Anastasia's mother, who gave a small nod. Looking at them again, he said,
"I grant the adoption. The child is yours."
It took them a few seconds to realize that it had happened, that the adoption had been granted, and Anastasia was theirs. All those months of planning and waiting, and it was over in 10 minutes. But Anastasia's mother had clearly been expecting this moment and knew what to do. She brought her daughter to them, placed a small crucifix in her hand and, kissing her cheek, turned and hurried out of the courtroom. The door banged shut as Ian and Elaine stared after her.
"Wait outside the courtroom while I get the paperwork from the judge," Dr. Chiabanu told them. "I will join you shortly."
Numb and completely overwhelmed, they took Anastasia by the hand and began towards the door. It was then that Ian realized they didn't have a photograph of Anastasia's mother.
"Wait here," Ian said as they emerged from the courtroom. "I'll see if I can find her."
Dropping Anastasia's hand, he hurried down the corridor in search of her mother. Chapter 10 All New. No words can describe how Elaine felt at that moment, as she stood in the corridor outside the courtroom holding her daughter's hand. Disbelief, euphoria, relief and panic combined as she stood immobile, staring after Ian. Then realization and responsibility kicked in. She was a parent and needed to behave like one. She looked at Anastasia, who returned her gaze, wide-eyed and confused. Did she understand what had just happened in the courtroom? Did she have any idea? She wasn't crying or upset, so perhaps, like her mother, this was simply the end of a long and inevitable journey. "Are you all right, love?" Elaine asked quietly, and Anastasia stared back. Ian reappeared, out of breath and clutching his phone.
"I got 2 photos of her," he said.
"How was she?" Elaine asked.
"Upset, as you'd expect, but she wiped away her tears and put on a brave face for the photograph. I think she was pleased I'd asked her and that we are going to keep her memory alive for Anastasia."
Ian showed her the 2 photographs he'd taken in the square outside the courthouse, and Elaine's eyes immediately filled. The woman was looking directly into the lens and trying to smile so that her daughter would have a positive image to remember her by. It felt uncomfortable standing outside the courtroom looking at photographs as if they were on holiday. But these 2 pictures would probably be the most important either of them ever took. Elaine was pleased they were nice photos. A copy would go in Anastasia's life story book, and another they'd frame and put on a shelf in her bedroom so she would grow up aware of her origins, just as the social worker had said. Seeing Ian's mobile phone, Anastasia agitated to look, and he showed her the photographs and then put it away. Phones and cameras weren't allowed in the courthouse.
"Well," he said to Elaine with a big sigh, "we've finally done it. Congratulations."
He kissed her cheek, then stooped to kiss Anastasia's. Her skin felt cold.
"I don't think she's warm enough," he said to Elaine. "Put on her hat, scarf and boots."
"Oh, dear, yes, of course," Elaine said, immediately concerned for her daughter's welfare. They tucked themselves in a corner of the corridor out of the way, and Elaine unzipped the holdall and took out the fleece-lined boots, then the matching scarf, mittens and hat. Anastasia's face lit up, clearly having never owned anything like this before. "I hope the boots fit," Elaine said, squatting beside her to put them on. She carefully slipped off the plimsolls she was wearing, and with Anastasia steadying herself against Ian's leg, she eased her feet into the boots. They were slightly too big, but better that than too small. Anastasia looked down at them, delighted. Elaine tucked her jogging pants into the boots and then eased her little hands into the mittens. Anastasia was still holding the crucifix, and later Elaine would put it somewhere safe. She tied the woolen scarf loosely around her neck and put on her hat. It felt strange dressing her, like dressing a doll, but she knew she'd soon get used to it.
"It looks snug and warm," Ian said.
Elaine put the plimsolls into the holdall. They'd keep those and the clothes Anastasia had worn for the court hearing to show her when she was older. The crucifix she'd place in the memory box together with anything else significant that would help give Anastasia a better understanding of her past. The courtroom door opened, and Dr. Chiabanu came out clutching a wadge of papers, his folder and their passports.
"You can have these back," he said, handing the passports to Ian. "I have the adoption certificate, but I will need to apply for Anastasia's new birth certificate, passport and visa. You can go to your hotel now, and I'll be in touch just as soon as I've had these processed."
He clearly had a lot to do and wanted to get away.
"Thank you," Ian said, shaking his hand.
"Thank you," Elaine added.
"You have a cab waiting?"
"Yes."
"Okay, I'll be in touch."
"Dr. Chiabanu," Elaine said quickly before he left, "does Anastasia know what happened in court, that she has now been adopted?"
"Yes, I would think so," he said.
Then almost as an afterthought, he said something to her in her own language.
"Mummy and Daddy," she said, puzzled. Then her brow knitted and her face clouded.
"She'll be fine," he said, patting her woolly hat. "Take her back to the hotel and give her a bath and something to eat."
He said a quick goodbye and hurried off. Months later, looking back, Ian and Elaine were sure that was the moment Anastasia had been told what had happened in court.
"Mummy and Daddy," she repeated quietly.
"Yes." "Come on, love, let's go," Elaine said.
They took a mittened hand each, and Elaine felt Anastasia's fingers tighten around the crucifix as they returned down the corridor. Outside, the cab was waiting where they'd left it, the driver at the wheel. It seemed a lifetime ago that they'd arrived at the courthouse, although it was little more than an hour. Ian opened the rear door and helped Elaine and Anastasia in, then tucked the hold all in the footwell at Anastasia's feet and got into the passenger seat at the front. The journey back to the hotel seemed quicker than going, for now they had Anastasia to tend to. To begin with, she sat quietly beside Elaine under the adult seatbelt, looking at everything around her. The driver, the back of Ian, the seats, the handbrake, the windows, the door furniture, and the view through her side window. Perhaps it was the first time she'd ever been in a car. They had no way of knowing, but clearly she was fascinated by what she saw. Then she grew restless. The car was much warmer than the courthouse, and Anastasia pulled off her hat and threw it into the footwell at Elaine's feet. Elaine picked it up.
"Are you too hot, love?" she asked, taking off her scarf. She left on her mittens.
A moment later, Anastasia pulled off her mittens and threw them at Elaine's feet. She picked them up, took out the crucifix, and tucked it into her pocket for safekeeping. Anastasia wriggled, tried to remove her seatbelt, which Elaine told her had to stay on. Then she began straining forward, tugging on her belt to get at the holdall at her feet.
"Perhaps she wants another drink," Ian suggested,
turning round in his seat to look. Elaine unfastened her own seatbelt so she could reach the holdall and took out the first carton of drink she came across, the apple juice. But it was obvious from Anastasia's scowl this wasn't the drink she wanted. Elaine rummaged some more and took out the other packet. Anastasia grabbed the strawberry milkshake. Do you want some help? Elaine asked, refastening her belt as Anastasia struggled to remove the straw from the side of the carton. But she wanted to do it herself, and eventually managed to tear off the straw as she'd seen her mother do. She inserted it into the packet with too much force, and strawberry milkshake shot everywhere, down the front of her coat, the car seat, and her side window. Her expression immediately fell serious, as if she expected to be told off.
"Don't worry," Elaine said, taking tissues from her pocket. "It was an accident."
She wiped the milk from her coat, the car seat, and the window. The driver glanced in his mirror but didn't comment. It was a relief when they pulled up outside their hotel. Ian paid and tipped the driver and then opened the back door and helped Anastasia out. As the three of them entered the hotel, the staff at the reception desk stopped what they were doing to look. They knew they'd been to court that morning and were now interested to see the child they'd adopted. Ian gave them the thumbs up, and Elaine smiled, but they didn't go over. They wanted to go to their hotel room to get organized, give Anastasia a bath, as Dr. Chiabanu had suggested, dress her in fresh clothes, and then use room service for something to eat. They knew they needed to take it slowly and give Anastasia time to adjust. To rush out to a restaurant or start meeting lots of new people straight away would have been too much for her to cope with. They'd learned from other couples that virtually every experience was likely to be new for the child, so they should take it very easy and not overload her. Too many experiences too soon would be confusing and distressing for her.
"This is a lift," Elaine said to Anastasia as they got in. It was empty.
"Lift," Elaine repeated, as she did with all new words, hoping Anastasia would learn them. Anastasia let out a startled cry as the lift began moving, then caught sight of her image in the mirror and stuck out her tongue. Ian and Elaine laughed. Anastasia gave another startled cry as the lift shuddered to a halt.
"It's okay," Elaine reassured her. "It's just the lift stopping."
The lift doors opened.
"We're going to our hotel room," she told her.
Anastasia looked in awe at the patterned carpet in the corridor and bent down to touch it as though she'd never seen carpet before. Perhaps she hadn't. There were certainly none in the orphanage. All the floors were tiled. Their room was meticulously tidy, as always, after the maid had been in.
"Let's take off your coat," Elaine said, unzipping it.
Anastasia stared around, amazed. She slipped it off, but before Elaine had a chance to remove her boots, Anastasia had rushed over to the double bed, running her hands over the silky patterned bedspread.
"She's probably never seen anything like this before, either."
"They haven't put up the extra bed,"
Ian said, slightly irritated.
"I told reception this morning we'd need it. I'll phone housekeeping now."
As he did, Elaine took off Anastasia's boots and then watched her as she went around the room exploring, touching everything she could reach. The dark wood furniture, the velvet armchair, the glass-topped coffee table, their suitcases. Elaine told her the words for the object, and when she went into the ensuite, Elaine followed. Anastasia looked incredulously at the gleaming white porcelain. They had showers and toilets at the orphanage, but nothing like this, and it was likely that wherever she'd stayed with her mother was very basic, too. Anastasia went over to the toilet, lifted the lid, and pulling down her pants, climbed on.
"Good girl,"
Elaine said, pushing the door to. Ian was still on the phone, trying to organize the bed. While Anastasia wasn't at all self-conscious in going to the toilet and then wiping herself, Elaine felt a little awkward, not sure what her role was. Had Anastasia been a baby, she would have changed her nappy, but she had obviously passed that stage and was now very self-sufficient. She flushed the toilet but was going to leave the bathroom without washing her hands.
"Come here, love," Elaine said, steering her to the wash basin. "You need to wash your hands."
Elaine ran the water to the right temperature and, placing the small tablet of hotel soap in Anastasia's hands, helped her wash them. They were grubby from the day's grime.
"We could give you a bath now,"
Elaine suggested as the child dried her hands. It seemed as good a time as any.
"Then you can put on your new clothes," she smiled.
Anastasia stared at her without the slightest idea what she was talking about.
"Bath,"
Elaine repeated, touching the bath. Anastasia frowned, puzzled. They only had showers at the orphanage, so it was possible she'd never seen a bath before.
"I'll show you," Elaine said.
She put in the plug, turned on the taps and ran the water, checking the temperature as the bath filled. She then helped Anastasia out of her clothes and lifted her in. As her feet touched the warm water, she screamed with delight and screamed again even louder as she sat down and the water lapped around her waist. "Shh," Elaine said lightly, putting her finger to her lips.
"Daddy is on the phone."
Anastasia slapped the water at the side of her with the palm of her hand, creating a splash. Elaine noticed her skin was very pale, as though she'd never been outside, and there were some red sores on her back, which she would get checked by the doctor when they took Anastasia for a medical once they were home. Anastasia loved her bath, and it wasn't long before she was splashing and kicking. Water flew up the walls, in her face, and all over Elaine. They both laughed, and Elaine finally started to relax. This was an example of what motherhood was all about, enjoying bath time with your child. And at home was a selection of bath toys and bubble bath to make the experience even more fun. Ian finished on the phone and stuck his head round the door.
"They're bringing up the folding bed now," he said. "You're having fun."
"We are," Elaine cried.
He left them to it. The water turned grey, suggesting Anastasia hadn't had a full body wash for some time. Elaine would have liked to wash her hair. It smelled of the orphanage, but decided to leave it for now. The water was cooling and they hadn't eaten since breakfast.
"Time to get out," she said,
and motioned for Anastasia to stand. Anastasia stayed where she was.
"Come on, love. We're getting something to eat. Food."
She pointed to her mouth and mimed eating. Anastasia continued splashing, harder now, kicking her feet and soaking Elaine. Elaine laughed indulgently, but she really did need Anastasia out now. When it became obvious she wasn't going to leave the bath, Elaine removed the plug and the water slowly drained away. Anastasia sat in the depleting water, watching it disappear until there was just a small puddle left.
"All gone,"
Elaine said.
"Gone,"
Anastasia repeated, and Elaine clapped. She'd learnt another new word. Anastasia was now willing to be helped out, and Elaine wrapped her in a bath towel and patted her dry. She guided her into the bedroom where she dressed her in the new clothes. Clean from the bath and wearing the clothes and pink furry slippers Elaine had chosen, Anastasia seemed to have become more their child. Once her hair was washed and styled, that would help too. A knock sounded on the door and Ian answered it. Two chambermaids came in carrying a foldaway bed. They stared inquisitively at Anastasia, and Elaine felt slightly uncomfortable.
"Over there, please,"
Ian said, showing them where they wanted the bed. They unfolded it and put it into place, but there was just the bed and mattress, no bedding.
"Duvet covers?"
Ian asked. They looked back at him blankly.
"Bedding,"
he said, showing them on the bed. One of them nodded, said something to the other, and they headed out. As they passed Anastasia, the same one muttered something to Anastasia in her own language. Anastasia clearly understood, and from her expression, whatever had been said wasn't positive, and could even have been nasty, for she looked at them anxiously. Clearly Ian and Elaine had no idea what had been said, and Anastasia couldn't translate. They were aware that some of the population were opposed to international adoption, believing they'd be better off in the state-run orphanages, which clearly wasn't true. When the women returned with the bedding, Ian thanked them, but took it from them at the door and said they'd make up the bed, so they had no contact with Anastasia. With little idea of the food Anastasia liked or was used to, Ian and Elaine ordered a selection of dishes from the room service menu, including French fries. All children liked French fries, didn't they? When the food arrived, Ian took it at the door, and they sat on the bed to eat with the trays of food between them, and told Anastasia it was like having a picnic. She was fascinated by the plates of attractively presented food, but ate virtually nothing. She took a tiny bite from everything, but no more, which was worrying. She wouldn't have had anything since early that morning apart from the two small cartons of milkshake. Elaine and Ian both tried to tempt her, offering little portions of the food to her mouth, but she refused, shaking her head and clamping her lips tightly shut. "Perhaps you'll have something later," Elaine said, and gave her the glass of orange juice they'd ordered. She didn't want that, or the cup of tea Elaine cooled with extra milk. Her gaze went to the hold all they'd taken to court but hadn't unpacked. Scrambling from the bed, she went over and began tugging at the zip, trying to undo it.
"Carton of drink," Ian said as Elaine left the bed to help her.
Elaine took out the cartons of juice and the bottle of water, but these clearly weren't what Anastasia had in mind.
"There aren't any more milkshakes," she said, shaking her head. "All gone."
But Anastasia had to see for herself and emptied out the entire contents of the bag before she was satisfied, then grabbed the carton of apple juice. Elaine waited as she put in the straw and then mopped up the spillage with tissues. She finished the drink quickly, and Elaine tried to tempt her to eat again, but she wasn't interested. Ian had nearly finished his meal.
"Tomorrow we could all go to the supermarket we've been using," he suggested. "She could choose what she likes then."
"Yes, good idea," Elaine agreed.
Anastasia joined them on the bed as Elaine ate. Then she began yawning and rubbing her eyes.
"You must be exhausted, pet," Elaine said gently to her. "Try to have a little sleep."
She helped Anastasia to snuggle down. Anastasia rubbed her face against the soft, luxurious feel of the duvet and began sucking her thumb. It wasn't long before her eyes closed and she fell into a deep sleep. Ian and Elaine gazed at her admiringly. Her little features relaxed in sleep. She was so gorgeous and everything they could possibly have wished for. Her breath fell light and even, and her thumb slipped from her mouth as she slept. If they'd known then what was to follow, they might have taken the opportunity to rest themselves while they had the chance. Anastasia slept for 2 hours and then woke with a start.
Chapter 11
Exhausted. It was just after 4 p.m. when Anastasia's eyes shot open, and she was immediately off the bed and at the door of their hotel room. It was such a sudden awakening that it made Ian and Elaine start, and they wondered if she was fully awake. But any doubt quickly vanished as she began hammering on the door.
Elaine went to her. "No, love, quietly," she said, trying to draw her away. "There are other people in this hotel. Don't bang on the door."
Which, of course, was meaningless to Anastasia. She broke from Elaine's hand and ran around the room screaming, not crying or upset, just screaming.
"She's got a good set of lungs on her," Ian quipped.
They hadn't heard her scream before, but Elaine wasn't amused.
"Shh, quietly," she said, catching her by the arm. "Shush."
She put her finger to her lips.
"Too much noise. What's the matter?"
Anastasia stared at her blankly.
"Let's get you some toys out to play with. Ian, can you help, please?"
He left the bed and, opening the suitcase containing Anastasia's belongings, took out some of the new toys they'd brought with them, including another activity center. He set them beside Anastasia and then took the trays off the bed and put them outside the door for room service to collect later. Seeing the door open, Anastasia made a dash for it, but Ian quickly closed it. She banged on it with her fists, clearly wanting to be out.
"Come on, play with the toys," Elaine encouraged, going to her, but Anastasia was more interested in the door.
"It's like that first day we were with her at the orphanage," Ian said. "Do you remember? She kept going to the window and then ran off."
Elaine didn't find this reminder helpful and drew Anastasia away from the door towards the toys. They both tried to engage her in play, but a few moments later she was at the door again, hammering for all she was worth. Exasperated, not sure what to do for the best and feeling a little rejected, Elaine went to her.
"Anastasia, you can't go out, love. You're staying with us. We're your mummy and daddy." "Mummy and daddy," she repeated and thumped the door harder.
"Perhaps we should go for a walk," Ian suggested. "I know we were planning on spending the rest of the day here to give her a chance to adjust, but that's not working. We could go to the supermarket now rather than tomorrow."
Elaine agreed, and with a plan of action felt more positive.
"We're going out," she told Anastasia,
and picked up her coat and boots. As soon as Anastasia saw her out doorway, she realized they were leaving, stopped banging on the door, and went to Elaine. Used to being self-sufficient and doing things for herself, Anastasia rejected Elaine's help and began struggling into her clothes herself. Putting on boots, a coat, mittens, hat and scarf is difficult for any 2-year-old, even if they are independent, and it kept Anastasia quietly occupied for a good 10 minutes.
"Perhaps give her clothes to play with in future," Ian remarked dryly, and finally Elaine smiled. "It will be okay," he reassured her, kissing her cheek. "Just give her time. It's all new for her as it is for us."
With Anastasia finally dressed for going out, she allowed Elaine to do up the zipper on her coat and take her hand, and they left the room. Ian summoned the lift, and the couple who were already in it moved aside to make space for them. However, the woman blocked Anastasia's view of herself in the mirror, and she pushed her aside so she could see. The woman smiled indulgently, but Elaine apologized and said firmly to Anastasia, "No, it's rude to push." She appreciated that until now Anastasia had probably had to push to fend for herself and take what she wanted, and was therefore more streetwise than the average 2-year-old. But that was behind her now, and she'd have to slowly learn what was polite in order to fit in. Reception was busy, so Elaine and Ian were able to slip out without having to go to the desk and introduce Anastasia to the staff. They felt that once they knew Anastasia better and were used to her ways, they would be more confident parenting her, and would of course show her off. But for now, there were so many unknowns, especially in her behaviour, that they didn't want any nasty surprises in public, which they might struggle to cope with. Elaine had to insist that Anastasia held her hand while near the road. "Cars hurt," she told her. Ian took Anastasia's other hand and they crossed the busy main road. Anastasia seemed less agitated now than she had done in the hotel, and the walk to the supermarket was uneventful, although it was cold and the light was failing early in winter. The supermarket wasn't much warmer, and the 2 cashiers positioned near the doors were wearing their coats. They looked at Elaine, Ian, and Anastasia as they entered, intrigued. Although the women didn't speak English, they had got to know Ian and Elaine by sight from their daily visits, and must have wondered who the child was. It was possible they'd surmised they'd adopted her, as this was the closest shop to the hotel where other couples who were in the country to adopt had stayed. Ian nodded politely, and then the 3 of them began up and down the aisles looking at the shelves crammed full of goods. Anastasia was fascinated. Perhaps she'd never been in a shop before. It was impossible to know. With a month to go before Christmas, new festive goods were being added daily, glittering and enticing. They had to stop Anastasia touching everything in case she dropped or damaged an item. The glass baubles were especially fragile. She'd really come here so she could choose some food she liked, and they gradually led her to the tins, packets, and fridge and freezer food. Anastasia was far more interested in baubles and tinsel. Elaine said that perhaps it was asking a bit much to expect a 2-year-old, even one who knew her own mind, to choose food. Ian agreed, and pointed out it was a pity they couldn't ask a member of staff what children in this country ate, as they didn't speak the language. Dr. Chiabanu's guidance notes had advised adopters of babies which powdered milk to bring, and said that children on solids ate a variety of meat and vegetables, bread and thick soups. After spending half an hour in the shop, they bought something that looked like a local variation on a pot noodle. It just needed boiling water to be added to it. They also bought bread rolls, apples, bananas, a milkshake, and a fairy for the top of the Christmas tree that Anastasia wouldn't let go of. The cashier smiled at Anastasia as she checked the items through, and then gave her a lollipop from a box at the side of the till. Elaine thanked her. It was a nice gesture, and her friendly manner towards Anastasia suggested that if she knew they'd adopted, she approved. Outside, Anastasia enjoyed the lollipop as they headed back to their hotel.
"Well, at least that's one thing she'll eat," Ian remarked. "Perhaps we should go back and buy the whole jar."
Elaine smiled, aware he was joking. It was dark now, save for the street lamps and car headlights, and even colder as night fell. There was no way of knowing what Anastasia was thinking or feeling, or where she thought they were going. She seemed quite content sucking her lollipop until they approached the hotel. Then she suddenly stopped dead and refused to move.
"What is it, love?" Elaine asked.
She'd taken the lollipop from her mouth and looked frightened and confused.
"We're going to our hotel room," Elaine gently reassured her.